Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Yeah, I hope you're well. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle and there's lots on the agenda today. We'll be speaking to a couple of young people from the City of Liverpool, from the Yellow House Project, who are working on a new mental health campaign, a new mental health workshop that they're hoping that young people within the city and older people too will get involved in. It's called Contentment, being content with your mental health. Contentment. We'll get the full story from Johnny and from Christian from Yellow House on the show between now and three. In the meantime, though, we're going to be speaking to somebody now who's going to flag up, well, International Father's Mental Health Day, which is on the way on the 19th of June, and also the man behind Dad's Mental Health Hour, which takes place weekly through social media. Mark Williams joins us on the programme. Mark, thank you for your time today. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Oh, thanks for asking me to come on. You just make awareness, thank you.
Hey, not a problem at all. Now, we're speaking to you from South Wales, as I understand it. I think your accent might give you away just a little bit, Mark, if your name doesn't as well. Just tell us about the idea behind International Father's Mental Health Day before we touch on your own story.
Yeah. It's basically a day just to get everyone talking about father's mental health, because I think it's such an area that... to bring actually, you know, we know about mothers, about perinatal mental health, but we need to include the fathers into the services too. I think I'm more of a family approach guy, because obviously if a father is, I've got mental illness, so that obviously that's got an impact on sometimes on the children if he's unsupported, you know. So it's about getting everyone talking about father's mental health on the 19th of June, really.
Brilliant stuff. Well, we can talk about it today as well, Mark. Now, when we were coming up with Mental Health Monday, we were coming up with all the different angles that we might look at. Postnatal depression was right up there, right at the top of the list. But we always considered it from a female point of view. But you've got personal experience in this yourself.
Yeah. Didn't know nothing about depression 12 years ago, I'll be honest with you. So uneducated about it. And it was my wife had an emergency C-section, and it was at the birth. I honestly thought my wife was going to die. I remember the doctors come rushing in, and they said, your wife's got an emergency C-section. And it was the first time I ever actually had a panic attack. Never had a panic attack ever before, because I honestly thought I was going to lose my son, the baby at the time, obviously, and my wife. And then my wife had severe postnatal depression after that, and they had to give up work, look after her. There was no money coming in. And then also then, obviously, I had a mortgage to pay. My wife was really, should have had a mother and baby unit because she wasn't safe. And all this, and my mental health was starting to suffer. And I was having suicidal thoughts around about the four-month mark. Wow. But I didn't have that overwhelming feeling of love towards my son at the time, I'll be honest with you, because obviously I was more concerned with my wife being alive, really, and the baby being alive. So, like mothers, I thought then, am I a good father, you know, so... Yeah, I was starting to doubt myself as a man.
I mean, that's incredible there. I mean, do you think it was like a combination of things there? Because actually, if you witness something so traumatic, people would naturally assume that that would become a PTSD, a post-traumatic stress disorder situation.
That's right. Well, the other thing is what I'm campaigning for is a lot of fathers have non-monitored or screened for any previous mental illnesses. So if you've got bipolar, schizophrenia, and it's just about managing it, and then transitioning to the father, then looking after a partner with postnatal depression or a traumatic experience in birth, obviously that's going to have an impact during the postnatal period. And that's when you get fathers who are depressed during the postnatal period. I was actually later diagnosed with ADHD, so I've had the condition all my life. And it wasn't until I had a breakdown in 2011, because I suffered about 6 years in silence, then after speaking to a psychiatrist, I was actually diagnosed with ADHD.
So do you think then that you had long-term mental health concerns and it was just this awful sort of event that you went through that really brought all those issues to the fore, combined with all those factors which, of course, come into play when you become a dad for the first time?
Yeah, I think it's a load of things. I think I've spoken to over nearly 2,000 fathers over the last 6-7 years, and I think every father is totally different. But the only way I can describe it, if there was no conception or baby, there wouldn't be depression in the postnatal period. And a lot of fathers, I feel, because they suffer in silence and they're not being screened early on, they actually been diagnosed, like myself, with depression. But if it wasn't any baby involved, the only way I can explain it, I wouldn't have been depressed during the postnatal period. But like I said, I was drinking, I was using negative coping skills like drink, and my personality changed during the postnatal period. I remember punching the sofa and busting my hand. So a lot of fathers are turning to drink, there's drugs, there's anger, and sometimes even violence when, you know, early prevention, if it was in place and it were properly screened, it wouldn't get that point.
Now, what was it like that time where everybody around you, friends, family members, were probably congratulating you, were probably saying, oh, isn't this wonderful news? Oh, I can't wait. Isn't this fantastic? Isn't everything absolutely wonderful? Oh, you're so lucky. But you were saying that, you know, that first four-month period where even feeling love towards the child was a really difficult thing. Did that make you feel even more isolated?
Well, I didn't know nothing about depression. I didn't know postnatal depression. And I think it's one of the worst because everyone thinks it's a happy time as well, like you just said. But certainly, you know, looking after a loved one, somebody who cared, I couldn't tell my wife how I was feeling, really, because I didn't want to affect her mental health any worse. Like, so, and, yeah, it's, I think it's just like, we, you know, as men, we do think like women, am I going to be a good father? You know, it could be, you know, overworking, you know, we could pay for the child or the baby. We know about society now, it's totally changing as well. Fatherhood is totally changing too, like it was 20, 30 years ago. So, yeah, it's loads of factors why fathers do get postnatal depression. And it's actually research as much as 1 in 10 actually do get diagnosed with postnatal depression. It was a research 1 in 25, but some researchers say as high as 1 in 10.
I mean, in terms of speaking to mums now, I know a lot of the midwives and the doctors, they almost have like, a, you know, just as a standard course, you get, you know, the leaflets about postnatal depression or the baby blues, whatever you want to call it. Plus you get advice about, you know, family planning for the future and things like that, almost as a, like a mothering pack. Do you think that there should be something which happens for dads, that dads get their own specific advice? Not just for themselves, but also to help out in terms of helping out with mum and the things that she's taking. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, I'm not a father's campaigner. What I was finding was sometimes the father is the one who's struggling and is unwell, and the mother's fine, but that's impacting on her mental health, and that impacts on the bonding and attachment with the child too, and a lot of relationship programs. So my campaign is really to get the father screened for any depression during the postnatal depression, and I want health visitors to actually come along and actually screen the fathers too, because actually, as we know, early prevention also saves money too. Like for, like you said, a lot of fathers are going into other services when really it was that transition into fatherhood or postnatal depression was the main cause.
Yeah, and so much of this is about, you know, the social stigmas that exist, because as much as anything, that when dads find out they're going to be dads, those who are, you know, wanting to do the right thing and wanting to do all the right things, they'll think, right, I've got to get myself together now. I've got to, you know, knuckle down. I've got to, you know, earn the money. I've got to provide, you know, the nest for the family and so on and so forth. There's a danger that you go, right, well, I'll put all that stuff to one side and I'll just concentrate on earning a few quid and things like that. And I wonder whether or not, just socially, it's not something which dads would open up on in the first place. But then when you add in the child into the mix, suddenly you think, well, I can't say anything now. I need it.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of fans I spoke to have already got anxiety in the workplace, but now they've got to work even longer hours to support the child. So there's loads of factors around this as well. And the thing is, what I've been campaigning for is there's no mention of the word fathers, believe it or not, on the CG192 NICE guidelines. There's no mention. There's partners, but there should be the word fathers, because we need to acknowledge the fact that it's a family approach. If our father is unwell, and the mother's fine, that's going to have an impact on her mental health. And a lot of relationships are actually breaking up when, if the early prevention was in place, it wouldn't be that case.
In terms of your own experiences, you talked about the issues that you had with your son when he was first born and the issues that you faced. At what point did you feel, right, I can cope now, I can look at my child a little bit differently, I can think differently about the situation, or do you still have sort of ongoing concerns?
I'll be honest with you, I was lucky in a sense. I had to stay home for 6 months, so my bonding attachment really increased. I got really good bond attachment with my son. I did. Like I said, a lot of fathers actually go to work after 2 weeks, you know. So if they haven't got any sort of attachment, you know, you can see that needs to be addressed too. But I think looking back now, that was the one good thing about it. I was actually home with my son, so I was very much learning to have that bond and attachment, you know. So, but nobody ever asked me how I was feeling, and rightly so, it was always at that time I felt, because I just wanted to make sure my wife was well. But it wasn't until I had a breakdown 6 years later that I realised I was actually postnatally depressed. I never had any sort of depression up to that point. It was the first time I actually had ever suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing, if we're absolutely honest, Mark, is that people will think back to that time and they'll think about the lack of sleep and the pressure and the financial concerns and everything that comes with it and the weight of, you know, society expecting you to be able to raise a child. And I think a lot of people will think, oh, you know, that was just a period in my life. But then I wonder if people now think back, they might actually think, well, maybe there was something more to that, you know, and they might have moved on. They might be 2 years away from it. They might be 5 years away from it. They might have been 10 or 20 years away from it. But I wonder whether or not they too might think, if they were to really consider their own mental health at the time, whether or not postnatal depression may well have been an issue. Mark, it's probably fair to say that it's taken you on a journey, this one, and you've spoken at many different conferences and summits about the work that you've done. You've even had sort of meetings with the royal family as well. It's an incredible journey you've been on.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the one thing I want to give, is that from a bad experience, obviously I've turned my life, and I've obviously been diagnosed with ADHD at 40, you know, 40. And that was another thing, you know, you can imagine everyone think ADHD is in children, but obviously, that was a eye-opener. But I think, yeah, I want to educate people, and also I want to inspire other people to say, look, you can use your story, like a lot of people are now, and you can inspire other people to get the help. And I've actually, you know, changed my career now, and actually, like I said, do talks, workshops, and been around the world speaking as well. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a journey, but a good one as well. I've educated myself about depression too.
And your wife, Michelle's also involved in it as well. She's obviously suffered, as you said, her own issues as well, but she's fully supportive of you on this sort of new campaigning.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. My wife works in mental health now as well, for Mental Health Matters Wales, and also... and we're from a town called Bridgend, which was a lot of suicides in Bridgend years ago. So, and we're from, my background is youth work, believe it or not. So I've got a big interest in mental health, but especially in fathers and family support as well. But yeah, you know, like I said, it's been a great year. But most importantly, it's not about me. It's about getting this education support out there for the fathers, as well as the mothers as well, because I do campaign for the whole family, because it does affect the bonding and attachment with the child. And that, as we know, if early prevention was in place, it actually saved money.
And you know, you're doing this from a father's point of view, and it's, but you know, you're looking to take care of the whole family, as hopefully most dads are. But it's strange, isn't it? Because most of the time in life, in society, in jobs, in work, it's the men who have the upper hand, isn't it? You know, it's the men who get the benefits, and it's the women who are now fighting for equal footing right across the board. And there's various examples in pay and holidays and career progression and all that sort of stuff where men have a natural sort of advantage. But with this one, do you find it quite strange that you're trying to talk up the man's role, and you're trying to say men need the help here? Because as a rule across society, we're used to women who are calling for, and obviously men who are calling for sort of equality within things like the workplace and career progression. But you're saying, hang on a minute, we need to keep our eye out for the men here. We need to help the blokes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, we look at the behaviour of the father, something, or the man sometimes, you know, and sometimes their negative coping skill is drink, there's drugs, like you said, is even violence sometimes, you know. I've spoken to loads of fathers, and like I said, you know, in maternal services, when you look at the maternal services in general, a lot of fathers are, even today, are telling me, Mark, I don't feel part of this service. I want to be part. Fatherhood has totally changed. Fathers want to spend more time with their children. And as we know, well, I think it's like 200,000 fathers are actually bringing up their children on their own. So there's more fathers are staying home now as well. So we need to change with society as well. And we've got to make sure that the father is included as well as the mother. And that's the most important thing, you know, it's a family approach to maternal services as a whole. And also, like you said, birth trauma amongst men is absolutely really under research. Is more stuff coming out now recently, but communication in the actual labour ward can actually cause trauma, as I know from my own personal experience. Like, you know, so yeah, communication needs to be yeah, really brought to highlight it, especially in the labour ward.
Mark, what we'll do, we'll get all your contact details up on our social media through Twitter and from Facebook as well. And if people want to organise anything or speak to you or come and contact you, then they can find you through our social media. And of course, marking International Father's Mental Health Day on the 19th of June. So, Mark, we wish you all the best. Thank you for your time today. And thanks for shedding a light. I've learned something expecting to learn on the programme today.
Oh, thanks. No, thanks for asking me. And like I say, if there's any fathers out there, please just go and get help. Don't suffer in silence like I did. Go and get the help.
There you go. That's Mark Williams joining us on Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. There you go. So dad's also getting postnatal depression. I knew we'd sort of learn new things. I knew I'd learn new things doing Mental Health Monday. I've learned absolutely something new there. Now, there are various bits and bobs that are going on from a Mental Health Monday point of view. A lot of people contact the show for various different reasons with events that they're involved in. Last week on the show, we had Colin Dolan from the Mental Health Football Association in the studio. They've got an event in the Palace of Westminster tomorrow. He was talking about football as therapy. Well, hashtag football therapy is an event which is taking place in the Palace of Westminster tomorrow. That's Tuesday, the 7th of March. Colin will be speaking, as will the local MP, Andy Burnham. He'll be speaking. Jonathan Garside from Everton Football Club, the health and wellbeing manager, he'll be speaking too. There'll also be representatives of QPR, Chesterfield Football Club. Matt Birch from Merseycare NHS Foundation Trust is there as well. Colin will obviously be speaking. And Stan Collymore as well, but we'll be speaking at that event. Mental Health Football Association at the Palace of Westminster. Hashtag football therapy might be one worth following there through social media. And also, the Liverpool Mental Health and Learning Disabilities Hackathon, which is taking place at the University of Liverpool this weekend from Friday through until Sunday. Now, as part of that, they're flagging up the fact that 90% of UK youth will get a negative reaction to their mental health diagnosis, ultimately, they say, leading to 40% of them dropping out of school or college. Hackathons are all about coming up with different ideas of changing the way that the public views certain things. There are 1,001 different reasons. If you type in hacking health Liverpool into your search engine, you can find out all the information about what the hacking event is all about, where it's taking place at the University of Liverpool. But get involved in that if you're a local to Liverpool, the Liverpool Mental Health and Learning Disabilities Hackathon taking place this weekend, Friday through until Sunday. It's Mental Health Monday. It's always busy. If you've got an event that you're involved in you want to tell us about, drop me an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. And of course, we hear lots of stories on the show. You might relate to certain stories or certain people. Absolutely. If you want to share your own story, drop me an email. Tell me about it. If you want to remain anonymous as part of that email, then that's absolutely fine. Or you'd like to come on the show and talk about your own experience of mental health, mick@radiocity.co.uk is the email address. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Loads of people are getting involved in mental health and events that are taking place right around the country and right around here on Merseyside too. There's a new programme which is getting underway at a local charity, Yellow House, based in Liverpool City Centre. It's called Contentment, and it's all about contentment from a mental health point of view at a young age. Earlier this week, I caught up with Christian and Johnny, who are the men behind the Yellow House Contentment Project. They explain what it's all about.
The idea come from is that in Yellow House we work with trying to develop the young people who have mental health issues, and the word breaks up into two words. It's to be content with your mental health, and that's what we want to do in Yellow House, to make sure that the young people are content with their mental health. And we're not psychiatrists, we're not trying to cure anyone, we just want to make sure that they are content with their mental health.
What are the sort of issues in Yellow House that you are witnessing, that you're being told about, that you're looking to deal with when it comes to mental health?
It ranges from the very common ones, such as like depression and social anxiety disorders, but and a large one is also autism. But one thing that we found out is that any young person that we come in contact with in some way, shape or form has some kind of mental health issue. And I think that's just the pressures of what young people have to encounter in today's world. It's just so much pressure, and it does have an effect on each and every young person.
Christian, I know that Yellow House does a lot of work with people who would be classed as, you know, maybe outsiders in society, people who've got disabilities, and social anxiety has been a big part of that, because you can have various conditions, and it might be an autism thing, might be a disability, might be a physical impairment. That can have knock-on implications, can't it, to your mental health?
Yeah, of course. a lot of our young people, I mean, our young people's mental health ages from loneliness, and the young people come just to make friends. And also some of our young people have been on the verge of suicide. And that's kind of like the Richter scale of the mental health that we deal with. But we believe at the Yellow House that somewhere along the line, almost everyone will deal with mental health, you know, and it comes in different kinds of shapes and sizes. I mean, for us, our young people just want to kind of be in a safe environment where they can just be together, learn from each other. A lot of our young people are from different walks of life, so they can share their knowledges and their experiences with each other and just essentially be together in a safe place in Liverpool.
So you're not clinical psychologist, you're not psychiatrist, and this isn't a medical thing you're getting yourself into, but what have you sort of agreed between yourselves that you can actually do? So what is it you're going to do that's going to make a difference to these people? You can create the environment within the organisation, but how do you then help those young people leave the organisation, walk out onto the street, back into their own lives, back into their own homes, and maintain those sort of safety levels, if you like?
Well, essentially, the mental health that we've looked into is isolation, the feeling of insignificance in the world. That's what we've noticed with a lot of our young people come to Yellow House. They feel insignificant. They feel they have no part in the world. They feel that they don't have a role. They don't have friends. They don't have anyone. They don't have any importance within society. And dreams, a massive one is dreams. Our young people come with either have lost the dreams or have massive problems with their aspiration. They've got aspirations, but they need to kind of look into the goals and the stepping stones in which to achieve them dreams. And so what we try and do is break down what are the steps in which you can take to achieving them dreams. So we do a range of games and exercises. And a lot of them kind of exercises about trust and being together and really just kind of opening yourself up and speaking your mind and essentially just being able to communicate with each other.
I mean, we're talking and the sort of people you help with Yellow House, vulnerable people, that's probably fair to say, isn't it, Johnny, in terms of the people who would walk through your door. I mean, sometimes people join clubs and they go and they look around and they go, oh, this isn't for me. Or it's not for me, this, I want to try something else. And they go and join a different club, get new friends, even move schools, move colleges, go to university, try and find something different. It's a little bit different, isn't it, when you feel like life has got nothing for you? Because you can't just walk out, can you? You can't just go and change things. I mean, that's a big mindset change you're looking to make. When somebody's thinking, I can't see the point of what I can do and how I can make a difference. There's almost a despair to that, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I feel like with the Yellow House is that the environment that we create is so friendly and so fun and so informal in a way, which is a positive, because young people are used to very formal environments that they don't like. Well, some young people, such as schools and maybe people who seems of authority seem to be quite negative. So we always provide a safe and secure environment where there's no fear of authority or anything like that. You know, me and Chris are the two directors, but we're not sitting there telling them to, you know, only have one sandwich or put your cup away, wash your cup or anything like that. So for us, just to feed and have fun and provide the young person with that safe and secure environment. Well, how that develops the individual, for me, is quite striking how important it is.
I know you use the arts a lot when it comes to helping people. What are you going to do with in terms of the Contentment project, and how are you going to use the arts to sort of take people down those paths and along those journeys?
So it's a series of practical workshops which Chris will be running, and we focus on theatre and any aspect of creativity. And for us, because we're dealing with such a delicate and serious issue, that you have to kind of face it, not tongue-in-cheek way, but quite fun and quite delicate and quite informal. And for us, I think just using simple techniques of fun and games and silly games that really do, without the young person realising, really does develop them and really does help them.
I think, essentially, the exercises and the theatre and the filmmaking that we do at Yellow House really just gives young people a voice. We all come together and we pick an issue. It might be something in the newspaper or a big issue at the time, whether it's Brexit or whatever, and we sit and we talk about it together. And then what we do is essentially we create a piece of theatre, or we will make a film, and somewhere along that line and that process, a young person begins to tell their story, and that's this, and they get this feeling of like catharsis where they really feel like they've kind of let something go. And for some young people, it can be the matter of a couple of workshops at Yellow House, and for some young people, it can take like 15 years. But there's no time scale within Yellow House. We don't have a 6-week project, and that's it. It's an open door policy. Everyone is welcome. And the level of support is different for every young person. So we don't analyse that. In some ways, we more kind of take the informal approach where we feel that we just need to spend time with them and kind of realise what they need. And that's essentially how we do it. We don't follow a textbook.
We've got a couple of guests in the studio for Mental Health Monday. We're talking about the Contentment Programme, which is running through Yellow House, a charity based in Liverpool City Centre, Johnny Hesketh and Christian Anderson. You guys have recently been in Europe, haven't you? You do a lot of work in terms of speaking in Europe about these sorts of issues and young people. We're dealing with this matter in Liverpool, within the UK. Is this a Europe-wide issue? Are young people in Europe talking about their own mental health? We seem to be sort of, gathering a little bit of momentum on this one within the UK through programmes like this. What are people saying in Europe? Are people talking about mental health in Europe? Do they have a different attitude to mental health in Europe?
Yeah, I feel like, when we do our Erasmus Plus projects and we do travel with our work, you do find it doesn't really matter where you are from. It is the same with each and individual young person. But for me, is that I know that it's all over the news now. The politicians are all looking at mental health. There's a lot of MPs on board. And for me, I think the level of support is maybe different in other countries. I just feel like maybe in some more less developed countries, the support is not there.
So it's something which is it gathering momentum in other countries, or are they looking for examples of how things might work? I'm thinking that you might go there and say, look what we're doing in the UK, look what we're doing in Liverpool, and other countries might go, that seems to work, that's something that would be useful for us.
Definitely. I feel like a bigger issue in terms of the Central European countries is the refugee crisis is still a really big impact, and it has impacted us in the UK, but not as much. I think there is... that's kind of their focus at the moment. That's what we see. We're part of the Salto Youth network, and a lot of the training courses and youth projects that they're focused on is around the refugee crisis. So where we try to, the projects that we're doing this year is connect both of them. We're using the topic of the refugee crisis to bring everyone together. But at the end of the day, each and every workshop that we do will develop each and every young person through their mental health, through their social and emotional well-being.
Christian, just tell us about how people can get involved in this. If they like the sound of it, or they want to maybe hear about a session that you've got going on, come down and see you guys. Is it an open door? Do you have to book in for these things?
No, not at all. It's a complete open door. We are open Monday to Friday, all day, 9 to 5. And we're open. Just come and knock on our door. We're based in Oriel Chambers, 14 Water Street, and our Yellow House Centre is there. Come any time. We do have specific workshops. On a Tuesday evening, we run our theatre workshop. At 5 o'clock, the young people meet. We just have a cup of tea or a coffee, a few biscuits around the table. And then from 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock, we have our theatre workshop. And then on Thursdays, we also have a film workshop, which is not just watching films, but it's also the analysis of film and filmmaking, using cameras and all. And we'll be waiting with a nice cup of tea or a coffee and a chat and hopefully lots of exciting opportunities for the young people to get involved in.
And that's for the young people, and any volunteers or anyone who is interested in really making a difference also available to come at any time. And just go to our website, www.yellowhouse.info.
Yellowhouse.info for more information about the project, and you can go to them, but also they can come to you as well. Christian Anderson, thank you for your time today. Great to see you. Good luck with Contentment, and we'll have a catch-up on this in a few months' time. Johnny Hesker, thank you for your time too. Yellowhouse.info if you want to find out more about that particular project. You're with Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talk's Mental Health Monday. with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, if you've got your own story, maybe your own project you're involved in, or you want to find out more information about any of the things we've been talking about, you can drop me an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. Or via social media, @RadioCityTalk on both Twitter and Facebook. Mental Health Monday back next Monday. You can also download the show as a podcast as well. And thank you for people who are doing that. Share it with your friends on social media too, if you like it. Maybe you're involved in it, or you know somebody who is. And you can get all the information about the podcast via social media, Facebook and Twitter, @RadioCityTalk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.